Welcome to the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Justin Cuthbert, and very full Ilish Forfar this morning. Gonna take a week off eating after last night's Looney Dog appearance.
What was the final count?
Wow, we're just getting right into it, eh?
I mean, let's not bury the lead here.
I ate 7 hot dogs yesterday.
Now that's a PB, right?
Oh, hell yeah.
Like, by a wide margin?
By 2 dogs. I was ready to be an elite performer last night. I spent the last 2 weeks prepping. Very proud of what I was able to accomplish last night.
When did it hit you that you just had nothing left? Because you started hot.
So my strategy this time around for Looney Dogs was to try to go 1 per inning. And that was a great pace. You know, you get a little bit of space to stretch the stomach out. But by that 7th inning, I did the 7th inning stretch standing up with the hot dog, and it was just impending doom. You know, I was looking at it thinking, this is going to be rough. And so you buy the dogs in boxes of 4. And so I bought 4 at the beginning, and then I bought 4 at the bottom of the 4th. And that last one was staring at me in the box for 2 innings.
So you had 2 innings, dude.
And I couldn't do number 8.
Now, here's my problem, because we obviously have a wager on this. How many hot dogs were just left?
Shut up.
On the
ground? Were purchased. I don't want to hear now you're getting nervous because you know it's a successful night.
I'm actually not overly nervous. So I was looking at the stats again today. We haven't gotten near 50,000.
I don't know, Justin. I saw a lot of
fans. And I saw a lot of resistance. I saw a lot from you, like people eating pizza, hamburgers.
You know what I will say?
People smartening up
disgusting.
And just saying, like, we don't need to do this. But again, if there's 10,000 being cleaned up currently by the Rogers Center cleaning staff, I'm going to feel a little shortchanged.
I did see some individuals foregoing the importance of the evening by selecting to eat hamburgers and pizza slices in my row, and I was vocal about it. I leaned over, I said...
What'd you say?
I said, guys, we're in the fight of our lives right now, and you order a burger? And Buddy's like, What's going on? I had to explain to him. He's obviously not a listener to the Fan Morning Show. It's a person at 590 Fan, doesn't listen to the podcast because he had no idea. The worst offense of the evening was I was in line. First of all, the lines were at least 20 to 30 minutes. So to those of you that grinded it out and got some dogs.
It's another issue.
There was one at Aaron Judge at bat where I'm standing in the Looney Dogs line. I was like, this is it. He's going to make history, and I'm going to be.
And I am where I need to be right now.
I'm not even fazed. But there was a gentleman a couple spots ahead of me who ordered a foot-long hot dog. And I stopped him, and I said, we can't get a foot-long hot dog today. He said, what's going on? I said, you should have got 4 hot dogs. That's the equivalent. They're $1 each. And your foot-long hot dog was probably like $14.
Mm-hmm. Probably better, though.
So, pro tip for next year, more signage around the concourse. That makes sense because they don't want to lose money. But you don't know it's a dollar dog till you get up to the front and you look at the menu. But there's no signage. So you really got to be a fan. You got to be part of the community for the Looney Dog success. But anyway, I'm feeling positive.
Got to be following Ilish Forfar in every way possible.
I am feeling positive that there's still an opportunity to break the 50K mark and you'll be doing the beep test, but I think it's going to be tight.
I think it's going to be tight too. I think they're going to try to round up though, and it's going to fall short.
Why do you think they're stuffing the ballots, Justin?
Well,
I have faith.
I don't think they're stuffing the ballots, but I feel like there'll be some sort of approximation. Will they know exactly?
They will
know
exactly.
I guess they will know exactly how many are sold.
This isn't like, oh, I don't know. It looked like we sold 50K. I counted.
There are receipts, I guess.
Anyway, Shai Davidi, who posts the numbers, hasn't posted the numbers yet. Hopefully in the next 2 hours of our show.
The information is only privy to Shai.
Yeah, that guy's got a lot on this.
I mean, like, it's a lot of power.
You know what I did? I put my tweet notifications on for Shai so that I know.
Nice.
And also one more thing to admit before we move off of this. Well, I'm sure we'll cycle back. I'm not feeling the greatest, not feeling the hottest after yesterday's performance.
I mean, if you did feel good... you'd feel bad because, you know, you didn't.
You're right.
You didn't put yourself out there.
I had to unbutton my jeans at one point, the top of my jeans, because it was getting uncomfortable.
Mm.
That was a rookie move. Always wear stretchy pants.
At the ballpark?
No, on the TTC on the way home.
Mm. That's tough.
That's embarrassing.
I mean, it is par for the course on a night where you're looking to overeat.
But no shame.
No fun nonetheless.
That means that I put work in. You know, I did the listeners proud.
You left it on the field.
I did my part. And if I have to run the beep test, I'm doing it without a lot of regrets.
Even Steven, you're all square. You won't have to loosen any waistbands.
I almost need to run the boot test now. Jay's magic number is down to 2. Even though they lost last night, they can clinch tonight with a win and an Orioles loss. Their magic number down to 2. Our magic number is still 50K. To be continued on the Looney Dogs discussion. Last night, Yankees clinched the AL East.
Yeah, pretty subdued celebration from the
Oh, I'm sure Bronx there's some bombers. Behind closed door celebrations happening last
I assume.
Night.
And like, of course, you take your opportunity, especially when you clinch a division like fairly early with what, 7 games left on the schedule. Tomorrow is a meaningless game to them. Although it could be batting practice.
I'm betting the house on the Jays winning tonight. Just
with Mitch White. See, we're going to get to the Waken Rake, but this is a fascinating discussion. Because they seem to be going easy in the celebrations. However, they probably went out last night. So they were just keeping things behind closed doors. But, you know, the Blue Jays don't win, Mitch White starts.
This is the time to turn that around.
So I think it's fascinating.
Why would Aaron or some of their top players even play? Other than Aaron Judge looking for...
Judge has to play.
Of course. But
because
Judge
walked
some of those starts
4 times. I'll give Aaron Judge credit. Like, he's doing what's best for the baseball team right now. He could be just hacking away at anything near the zone. But it's almost like he's more patient right now. I guess it's playing into his favor. Like, if you know pitchers aren't going to give you anything.
What can he do?
You know you can be selective. But it's not like the Blue Jays were actively pitching around him. He just drew walks the honorable way.
So that's something that I noticed being in the presence of incredible Blue Jays fans who are mowing down dogs, is a lot of booing for Aaron Judge being walked 4 times. And I see from both sides, it sucks because you want to see greatness. But also, they were competitive pitches. Like, they weren't purposely walking him, right? They weren't doing the 4, you stick the 4 fingers up and say, let's
go. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't intentional. It might have been like semi-intentional in some aspects.
Mm-hmm.
But I Gausman didn't shy away. I don't think they shied away, honestly.
Right.
I just think Aaron Judge is not going to give in. Like, I think we should be a little bit concerned about the prospects of him getting the record, given that there's only a handful of games left and some pitchers are actively avoiding pitching to him. But, you know, it's getting down to the wire here. Like, this isn't
a
given.
Will Aaron Judge actually hit 62? Like, at this point, I'm
Again, he could have
unsure.
2 taters to absolutely feast on later against Mitch White. But it's getting to the point now where it's not a given.
They do play the Orioles next and the Rangers.
Either way, he's going to have an opportunity.
I wonder how much it weighs on him, though.
It doesn't seem... That's another thing. Like, he showed through his actions, taking 4 walks, being very, very selective, showing off his eye, that it's not like the only thing that matters. But he also seems like really unfazed by everything, which is kind of, it's pretty impressive. And Cameron Maybe we had a great chat
with
him yesterday.
He said he's an alien or a Martian yesterday.
He's a Martian. But a Martian in that, like, he's a massive individual, but also that he's like just cool. Like, cool under pressure. This isn't a big deal. And for others, it might be just like eating them alive right now. Like, we saw a little bit with
Don't talk about eating.
Vladdy chasing 100 home runs. We kind of felt like it was affecting him.
We did feel like
100 home runs.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's chasing a record that many thought would never be touched, or at least legally be touched, in a Yankee uniform nonetheless. And he seems cool about it. But he might be too cool because 4 walks isn't going to get it done.
Text in 590-590 what your thoughts are on booing the situation at hand. For Aaron Judge walks, understandably, you want to see him hit the ball. But the way in which the Blue Jays did pitch him and didn't, you know, let up and just say, like, let's walk him every time, would you have booed him? I just thought it was interesting. A lot of people in the stands did. And then I was like, yeah, boo, like, whatever, let's boo. And then I'm like,
I don't think there's much to boo.
But I was like, why am I falling into this trap of booing? I booed a couple times.
It was just...
But it was weird. I didn't really know why I was booing.
Competitive at-bats, that ended up in a walk. I don't think there's anything to boo, to be honest. I get people want to see it, but... Are you going to boo it if he sharply hits a line drive to right? Like, it's just the outcome of the at-bat. You can't hit a home run every time. Or else Roger Maris's record would be long, long in the history books and surpassed many times over. There were things worth booing last night, though.
There were.
Couple sloppy plays for the Blue Jays. After we just talked the previous day or the previous morning about how, wow, they look postseason ready. What an atmosphere. And what a way to rise to the occasion. All of a sudden, all these things fall apart where you're not running out, you know, non-home runs and getting thrown out at second. Your foot's coming off the base when you're sliding into second. You're letting bloop singles drop because there's a miscommunication. There were things to boo last night beyond Aaron Judge drawing walks. And I think, like, I don't know, the maturity thing's been a talking point for us for a while here.
Mm-hmm.
Years. Like, turning the corner. And I just don't think it's like a permanent thing. It's like they can come in and out of these phases of maturity where it's just like, okay, they have turned a corner, but it's not like a permanent thing that just lasts forever. They're going to have dips. And we saw a dip for whatever reason last night with the two main characters, Vlad and Bo, having regrettable moments each.
At this point in the season, when every single game matters, every single at-bat matters, every single defensive play matters, you cannot be making...
But did it matter last night?
It doesn't matter. It matters in, maybe not in the scheme of them winning a game. That's where it's out of reach. It matters in terms of your team identity and how you put yourself
mm-hmm.
out there right now when this is the most important series or stretch of your season. You are going to control your postseason fate.
You just get complacent after last night.
You need to be dialed in on every single opportunity you have to impact the game, whether it's 5-1, 5-2. I don't love the lackadaisical efforts mm-hmm. from a Bo and a Vlad last night.
I'm just a little like reluctant to go too far in on them because let's say this was 2 weeks in the future and they're in a playoff series. Do I expect Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to not run out a hard hit ball to
but
left?
But why do it now?
I just feel like
bad
it's hard.
Habits,
it's
Justin.
Hard to keep that. It's a bad habit that's not like. I just don't think it translates to a postseason game or a big game. This was a big game, but like,
I'm not ready to make excuses.
I don't know.
For them.
I just don't think this is like part of his DNA that this is going to happen all the time.
We've seen it before.
We have seen it before, but I feel like it's more a result of, hey, this is a long season. He probably was feeling himself after yesterday, actually thought that one went out. I think you learn over time, but do I expect him to be a little bit more dialed in the postseason if it was a do-or-die game, if it was tied in the ninth inning, whatever? Yeah, I do. Like, I don't think that, like, we saw a snapshot of the future here with him making a grave mistake in a big game, in a postseason game. I just think, like, victim of the moment type of thing. He messed up. He'll learn from it. He's going to hear from Schneider about it, mm-hmm. which I was impressed by.
I think I'm holding them a little bit more accountable for what...
These reminders are good things, too, sometimes.
And they're young, but are they... This is their third season in the major leagues, but and it's not hard to run it out. And it's not hard to stay on the base. And it's not hard to put an effort in. You're a major league ball player on a team that has massive aspirations. It's just a bad look. Like, fans are unhappy. Your coach, who we're going to play that clip in a second, is ready to call you out. It's going to happen. I'm totally in agreement that it happens, but it shouldn't happen now.
Slaps,
that's what I'm saying.
Slaps on the you're right. Slaps on the wrist can be a good thing, though. A little reminder, a little tough love. Hey,
hell yeah.
we have to be dialed in for the rest of the year. Like, that's not happening again this year. And then, okay, it's in Valley's head for the rest of the year. That's great. Maybe it doesn't happen again.
Here's a good tweet from Ben Nicholson-Smith that kind of shows how important everything is right now. Meanwhile, this was about the Orioles losing, the Blue Jays being out of the clinch tonight. The Rays win brings Tampa Bay to within 1.5 games of the Blue Jays. The Jays must beat the Rays outright to secure home field, as Tampa Bay has a head-to-head tiebreaker. So basically, it's a half-game lead. Every game, inning, play matters for the Blue Jays right now.
The other context is the Jays being down in the game and how situationally affects maybe
So you're just giving up?
No. I just thought he was at, he thought it was out of the park. But again, that game's tied. Is he not leaving room for
too
error?
Many hypotheticals?
No, I agree with you. I shouldn't be trying to defend him. It's just unrealistic to expect these guys to be like complete robots and robotic with everything they do, and that immediately when they hit the ball, it's head down and running as hard as they can. Like it's just not going to happen. He made a mistake. He's going to learn from the mistake. Hopefully, this shouldn't happen again this season. And if it doesn't, of course, that's a good thing.
Here's what John Schneider had to say post game about sloppy mistakes.
Weird play from Bo. Heads up by Connor Falefa to keep the tag on. You got to just be a little bit more careful if you're Bo. You see it sometimes, and it's a weird thing with replay. And you got to just be a little bit more attentive to what you're doing. And Vladdy flat out needs to run harder. That's inexcusable. I'll tell him that, when I see him later tonight. We're at the point where every little thing matters. Every 90 feet matters. It should matter every day of the season. And, that wasn't the best right there.
Okay, there you go.
I love
go
it.
Talk to him.
I absolutely love that comment from him.
A little tough love. You need to be able to do that to your stars.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be able to say, this is unacceptable. If it's Kevin Biggio or Whit Merrifield or Vladimir Guerrero Jr. or Bo.
And just because you had the
Springer.
Moment last night where you're on top of the world doesn't mean you can be humbled the next day or you can't be humbled the next day.
Mm-hmm.
So let's find that level of consistency. This reminder in the end, I think, is going to be a good thing, especially that because it didn't cost them a game in this series or in this postseason chase. Trying to spin it positive.
Yeah,
okay,
poly positive. You're soft.
Well, I'm probably going to be negative about our next topic.
A couple more things on Blue Jays. Austin Matthews throws out the first pitch alongside his buddies, Marner and Bunting, who were about
the boys
10 rows ahead of me. I had perfect vision
and
on Austin Matthews.
Over under 0.5
Zero?
Loony Dogs combined.
I didn't see him eat a loony
combined
dog.
Combined the three?
I don't know.
Bunting's a grinder. He could do a couple loony dogs.
I was disappointed. Just eat one for the content. But you know what? You know why I didn't eat one of the hot dog? Tough rep for hockey players in City of Toronto eating hot dogs.
Oh.
You don't want to become that next meme conversation. Post-game interview.
I feel like Austin Matthews might be slightly above that.
I'm just saying. Tonight, the Toronto Maple Leafs play.
Mm-hmm.
What if there's a poor performance from Matthews and they start to say, oh, it's because he had loony dogs. I don't want that on the loony dogs.
I don't know. I think you're setting the precedent here where you can indulge in loony dog night and still, even on a tight turnaround,
I know,
perform at a high level.
So Matthews' first pitch, that was pretty good. They seem to be enjoying themselves. Great. I love that he got a super warm welcome from the
I wanted him to really try. I think he could have painted the corner if he really wanted to. That was quality pitch. He seemed a little sheepish.
So it's funny. They got there quite early, the three of them, the trio, and they spent a lot of time down on the field pregame. And Aaron Judge, Josh Donaldson, and a couple more of the Blue Jays or Yankees stars, I don't want to misremember, actually wanted to meet Matthews and them and wanted to share that moment with them. And there's a photo of Aaron Judge and Matthews. And apparently they just talked about like their success and the 60 watch. And just that's really cool. The two superstars, like with that respect level for each other, wanted to come out and was like, hey, where's Matthews? I really want to meet this guy. I want to go out of my way on a game that's important. And this journey I'm chasing to find this guy and spend a couple minutes and chat with him.
I feel like Donaldson's that like middleman, right?
I think
they do know each other. Yeah, I think Donaldson has a decent relationship with maybe some current Leafs. Again, this is a couple years ago, so Not sure how much the overlap would be. But yeah, that is cool to see. It's also cool to see like a massive human being in Auston Matthews be like someone else towering over him and Aaron Judge.
Yeah.
Like he looks small out there. Not to mention Marner and Bunting.
So a couple more Blue Jays things before we pivot to Leafs. And we're going to have Blake on at 7. James Sharman on at 7:30. Talk about Canada soccer yesterday. And then the Oracle himself, Greg Amsinger, later, the prediction king. And there's a couple things I want to do with Blake about Schneider and his future and some of the things that Ross Atkins had to say about him, spoke yesterday. But I think the biggest conversation still, especially with the importance going down the line of what's next, is this floating around of the idea that Manoah might pitch 162 to secure home field. And we just talked about where they're at in that race and how close the Rays are behind them to make this a possibility. Mm-hmm. Atkins talked a little bit about their strategy for Manoah lining up for game 162.
It's just nice to have options and, you know, to be controlling our destiny right now and have the flexibility is a good situation to be in. And, you know, we'll, as we learn each day, we'll continue to work through that. We recognize that home field is of some value, and we recognize that winning game one of any playoff series is of significant value. So, you know, we'll continue to work through those scenarios, and good to be in a position to control our destiny and make that decision.
This is it. They're in control of their destiny.
Do they have options? It'd be nice to have options, he says.
Well, once again, the Jose Berríos question is raised after last night's performance.
Right.
You don't know which Jose Berríos you're going to get. And I think we saw two Jose Berríos yesterday in one game. So what happens next with the Manoah start and how that sets you up for a wild card series is going to be something we follow down the next week. And tonight, I think, is once again, a must win. The Yankees are going to be feeling like I feel this morning.
Hopefully worse.
So capitalize on tonight. Give yourself more of an advantage in these next couple of games.
I'll quickly just say, mm-hmm. I think he said it in the clip. He said home field is of some value. He might have had some other mm-hmm. qualifying word there.
No, some.
But he said winning game one is of significant value. He said it. One of them is significant. The other mm-hmm. one is of value.
Do you think he's tipping his hand a bit?
I'm just saying he knows what's more important, winning game one, than home field advantage. The cooler heads will prevail. It's just my prediction.
What's not really that important other than seeing some faces for the first time is tonight's game between the Maple Leafs and the Canadiens. Mm-hmm. In terms of a preseason warm-up, we try to gain some things from that. But what we found out yesterday makes this conversation a bit heavier in terms of impact. John Tavares out for the remainder of training camp and the start of the season, 3 weeks, with an oblique strain. Was he playing baseball? That's very common. What that apparently happened Saturday during the game where he strained his oblique mm-hmm. and is injured enough to have to miss some significant time to start the season, the preseason. Raises the question of now what's happening on that second line. Who's getting the opportunity right now to fill in?
I mean, unfortunately, I think that's the least of the issues here. Because this is probably the worst thing that could happen. I mean, I guess,
the you worst know, thing that can happen.
In terms of like, okay, in the context of minor injuries
okay.
like, that the Leafs that? Are dealing with in training camp, this is the worst thing. John Tavares missing the ramp-up stage of the season is a fairly significant thing. And I remember, all of last season, excuses were being made for John Tavares, or at least the early parts of last season, because his summer was disrupted by the head injury he suffered versus Montreal, and that we kind of, I think, assumed that he was impacted with his ability to train and be ready for the season. And yet he dispelled those rumors or that notion at training camp mm-hmm. this year, saying, yeah, actually my summer wasn't really that affected. Of course, he had to take some time to make sure that everything was okay, But he trained and he was ready for the season, and the season wasn't maybe what most fans expected it to be. So now he's in the situation where he's actually going to miss the ramp up stage of the season. And I just think at this age, he's just turned 32 years old. The situation has to be right for him to be that dominant player. And now the time that was supposed to be spent getting ready for the season, finding out who your line mate is going to be, is now going to be lost. Mm-hmm. And John Tavares is going to be jumping on a moving train in the third to last season of this deal, unprepared for the season in many ways because of this injury. And he's also got a history of oblique injuries. He missed the World Championships mm-hmm. in 2019 because of this. It could be something that's reoccurring or an issue down the road. That's probably why they have to treat it the way they are. But like, one of the big, big things about training camp, the probably number one story, and you mentioned it, was that we've got to find Tavares a dance partner. And now we're not going to see who he's going to play with at all during training camp and this the preseason schedule, because he's not going to be around. This is a bad thing. This is as bad
it's the worst of a thing small that can
injury
happen.
The Leafs could suffer in training camp. And guess what? Number two is probably Jake Muzzin, and he's out as well, or was out. So it's definitely a concern.
Oh, it's certainly a concern, but...
And now you're looking at a second line, maybe to start the season of
that's
what?
That's right. We need to figure out what that's going to look like.
It could be Kerfoot, Yarncroke, Nylander, and that's not a bad line. I'm fine with that. If that's your second line behind, you know, one of the best partnerships in the league, you're going to be okay. I just, like, you got to find the right situation, the right mix for John Tavares, and now you're losing the experimental stage of that. It's bad.
There's a history between Kerfoot and Nylander. Obviously, they played a little bit of time together when Tavares was absent in that Montreal series.
They have a good partnership.
Kerfoot has played some middle center ice in camp so far. So there's that to fall back on if you're looking for, you know, hey, this can show us something. Those guys might look good together, but there's some opportunity to earn that spot once again, which has been a big question mark. Now there's almost two spots to earn. There's a chemistry to look for. Is this the Zach Aston Reese experiment? Is it Cali Yarncroke, mm-hmm. as you mentioned?
I think Adam Gaudette. It's good news for the fringes of the roster. I mean, Zach Aston Reese is signing a deal now, you'd have to assume.
Yeah.
There's going to be money at the outset of the season. That's another thing. They got to figure out, not that they won't, like, when to put long-term injured reserve in. Is John Tavares going to be out long enough where he'd apply for that? Like, that's never an issue. The Leafs figuring out and maneuvering and exploiting, I guess, the salary cap, that's not a thing. But it just changes what the plans were coming in to a slight degree, and maybe that results in a suboptimal start to the season, at least from a roster-building perspective.
Mm-hmm. We're also going to see Matt Murray tonight in his debut. I haven't seen him yet other than some preseason practice videos. Big opportunity for him to come out of the gates and give the Leafs fans and Leafs environment a little bit of
mm-hmm. soft landing
pause.
So far for him.
Yep. I think that will be important. We're going to see first overall draft pick, Juraj Slafkowski.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really excited for that. He's looked like he's got a lot riding on him in this organization as well, and he's going to make an impact, I think, right away. Looking forward to seeing him, at least.
I think it's important because it's not a sure thing that he will make an impact right away, I don't think. Mm. Like, usually we can lock these guys in, the number one overall picks, with the exception of Owen Power, who made the right decision, I assume, to stay back.
Mm-hmm.
But usually it's just like, yeah, you're starting day one in the NHL, no problem. But I think there's... I don't know. Montreal's made some really quality decisions since hiring Jeff Gordon and Ken Hughes. And I think managing the development of Juraj Slafkovský is just as important as any decision they've made. So
right.
Maybe he looks automatic. Maybe he looks ready to go. Maybe he doesn't, and they make, you know, it's reason for them to hold him back. And I don't, like, this guy wasn't a guaranteed surefire number one. He's not like Connor Bedard in that. He's not like Austin Matthews, Connor McDavid. But he also missed out on some key developmental years, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he probably played a lot, probably way more than Shane Wright, big games at least. But we saw what happened to Shane Wright. It affected his development, his trajectory. He fell in the draft, maybe predominantly because he hadn't played enough hockey over the last couple of years. So it'll be interesting to see what he's got.
So that's three things tangible to look for tonight in preseason hockey, which is sometimes more than you're getting. What's that second line? Matt Murray and first overall draft pick. But looking ahead, huge news as well yesterday. Elliot reporting that there's going to be some significant salary cap raises in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Next year, possible. These are all projections. $82.5 million. The following season, $83.5 million. 2024-25 now, $87 to $88 million. And 2025 to 26 season, $92 million. You did a lot of work yesterday.
Not really.
Cuthbert put on his Blake Murphy hat and did some analytics for us about what this could mean for Austin Matthews and the Leafs in general.
We're not going to do this for everything related to Austin Matthews, but this is very, very important. And it's relevant because Matthews' deal is supposed to be, quote unquote, the easy one, right? Literally the market or the salary cap, the financial dynamics of the league determine what the elite of the elite make because it's just a percentage of the salary cap. Like Austin Matthews can literally just say, I just won the Hart Trophy. I'm one of the two best players in the world. I get what percentage an elite player or one of the two, three superstars in the league, the very best, get. That's what I'm owed. And whatever that is, you do the math, that's what I'm going to get. So let's project a little bit. Connor McDavid signed for 16.6% of the salary cap in 2017. So this is like the upper limit of what a single player can get. The actual upper limit is 20%. But Connor McDavid agreed to 16.6% at that time. However, the extension kicked in the following year, so it ended up being 15.7% of the salary cap. So I think we can earmark about 16% of the salary cap for Austin Matthews' next contract. So you can just do the math year by year. Thing is, he'll be able to negotiate this summer, but the contract won't kick in until 24-25. Now, what was the salary cap supposed to be projected at in 24-25?
Would be between 87.5 and 88 million.
So 16% of 88 is something that we're sort of dealing with here.
However, sign up for this radio show to do math. So
well, we're not. I got the math for you. We're not going to actually do it live on the air because both of us are incapable of doing that.
Yeah.
However, the following season, as you mentioned, it goes up to 92 million.
It's a big jump.
So despite being eligible to sign this summer where we're looking at like, what, 83?
Summer, 82.5, yeah.
So the following season, 82, 83? Anyway.
Yes.
Low still, right?
Whatever.
I would guess that what's more relevant to the conversation is not 83 million, it's 92 million. I can picture a world where Austin Matthews this summer says, we know where, and his camp says, we know where the salary cap's going. That's what we're going to earn on a long-term deal with this team. So we can look ahead to 24-25. When the books are pretty much clean for the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's the last year of Tavares, last year of Marner. Of course, you want to extend one of those partnerships on a long-term deal. We'll see what happens.
They only
with John
have
Tavares.
Riley and Yarncroke at that point.
Because they're clearing the books essentially for Austin Matthews to take up whatever percentage of the pie he wants. And I think he could sign a deal this summer, which is for essentially for the $92 million salary cap world and taking up upwards of 16%. So 16% of, say, 91, the salary cap is. That's the projection. We're looking at 14.56 million as a minimum on an average annual salary for Austin Matthews. However, that is the minimum because I feel like there's going to be a change at the top of the food chain here. I feel like guys like McDavid and Matthews, and it might be mostly Matthews, are going to try and reimagine what a superstar makes in this league. Again, 20% is the maximum, but these guys on their next deal, there's a belief that they're going to be pushing for 17, 18, 19% of the salary cap. So what's 20% of 92? $18.4 million. I don't think it's going to be $18.4 million, but it's going to be between 14.5.
And 16?
It could be. It's going to be between 14 and 18. That's all I can tell you right now.
So let's meet in the middle at $16 million.
I guess it can't be 18 because you still have to play 1 year where it's not 92, so slightly less. But we're talking about $15 million here, I think. And it's whether or not he takes, I don't think he's taking a haircut. I think the Leafs know exactly what they have to do, which is give him the percentage of the salary cap that he wants. And basically, what's that that's going to do? And they're preparing for it. That's why the cap is what it is, or the cap sheet is what it is. In 24-25, when John Tavares is in the last year of his deal, Matthews is going to be making beyond what he probably should, which is almost not possible, but at least in the short term, Mitch Marner will still be earning close to $11 million. Leafs are going to have like $40 million tied up between three players. So they're going to take a small step back that year. There's no doubt. With John, when John Tavares is in the last year of his deal, he's not going to be performing an $11 million player at that time. So we're looking at a couple years window here before a step back and then a restart here for the Maple Leafs. So this is how fast the window can come and buy, or can come and then leave. There's not much runway left here before Matthews sort of reimagines what superstars make, and then the Leafs have to reset.
All of this being said, sounds like you don't have much faith in him taking a hometown.
I don't think anyone's going to do it anymore.
Yeah.
Because the cap dynamics in this league are changing. The pandemic obviously shut things down for a little bit.
And Nathan MacKinnon had that opportunity, I think.
He took a haircut.
And that wasn't as significant.
The haircut made him the most highest paid player in the league on an average annual basis. But when McDavid's up again, which is a little bit after Matthews, maybe only 1 year after Matthews, and when Matthews is up, Matthews is going to set the standard here. And I think with new money coming into the system, it's pretty much all going to go to the top 1%. And all these teams are still going to be grinding, even despite, you know, in 3, 4, 5, 6 years' time, we maybe see the salary cap go to about $100 million.
How much does the Dairy Farmers of Ontario milk sponsorship help with this?
Crucial. It's crucial.
Man, that's a lot of change.
That's the one thing I'd like to see all over it. That's the one thing I'd like to see is like, I don't know, why aren't sponsors more involved? Like, hey, on top of the $15 million we're going to spend on you, we're going to give you an endless supply of sponsorship opportunities. Like, so, we got all these big companies in the room, and we're all going to work with you, Austin. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to lift a finger. That's where the money will come. We want you to be a winner. Let's keep the money off the books. But I don't think it's going to work that way. McDavid is going to stretch it to the upper limits. Matthews is going to stretch it to the upper limits. It's imperative that they get an 8-year deal signed. But all this money that's going to come in, and that Elliot showed us yesterday, it's going to the big guns.
We will have Elliot tomorrow on the show so we can break all this down, get his projections, how this is going to play out for some of those big name contracts. Here's a text from Matt and Dundalk. Why can't they just give star players the difference in bonuses and make room on their contracts for space in the salary cap? Or more players to do what Crosby did in his prime and sacrifice some coin for a couple cups?
See, Crosby didn't really sacrifice anything. It all comes back to percentage of the cap. And the salary cap was so low at that time that Crosby took up a good percentage of it. But as he travels an 8-year contract,
it starts to look like a nice, cheap contract.
It becomes a cheap contract. And
that's what happened with McKinnon, too.
Yeah, I mean,
he did take a cut, but it looked even worse.
It was a bit of a bridge deal. Mm-hmm. It was a great deal for the team.
Oh, yeah.
But at some point, you have to get, and that's another thing with Matthews. I don't know if he'll ever sign an 8-year contract. I think he might stick with the 4 and 5 years because he knows that he is worth a certain percentage, and that percentage
changes significantly
every year, especially if the cap is going to rise as we expect it to. The NHL's financials right now are very good. Like, it was supposed to be, you know, real bad coming out of the pandemic. It was supposed to be, like, threatening the viability of the league because they were stuck with all these contracts and the salary cap's not moving. How are they going to make it all work? Money's coming in. It's going to be all right. This is the best news for the league that the salary cap's going up, but it's also the best news for the big players because they know what they're worth.
A couple questions here before we take a break and do the A-list. And once again, we'll break all this down continuing throughout today and Elliot tomorrow. When the cap goes up, does the league minimum salary go up?
I don't think the league minimum salary goes up. The floor goes up, though. And that's a good thing. Though you want the league minimum salary to remain where it is because then you can...
Which is 750, right?
I believe so. Yeah. Spencer made a 700, didn't he?
Whatever.
Either way, it's in that range.
50,000.
You need that. It's important because you need players that are playing for that. If Austin Matthews is going to make $15 million a year minimum,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Dwayne from Brampton. Matthews will want $134 million over eight. That's 16.5 per year.
I would sign up for that right now if I'm the Leafs.
34. 134.
Because in...
Get it.
Yes.
Okay, just checking.
Yes. That's a good number. You take that right now. 100%. Mm-hmm. Because in...
8 years.
In 6 years, when he's in the fourth year of his contract...
It's looking good.
And the salary cap's $105 million, maybe? Nah, probably still be about 100.
Yeah, it's not going to go from 92 to 105.
You're giving yourself a chance. You need those cheap years at the end. And Matthews isn't like Tavares in that he's going to be a depreciating asset to a certain degree. He's probably going to keep his level for a pretty long time and throughout the term of an eight-year contract.
Last one here. Can you sign for a contract for percentage of the cap rather than a dollar value?
No.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Oh, I mean,
it'd be so easy.
The top of the top would love that.
Yeah.
Right?
Every year I'm getting 18% of the cap.
And honestly, if you could add anything to the CBA, I think it would be that exceptional player mm-hmm. where you can just pay them what you want to pay them. And that, like, and the reason why we don't have luxury tax and all that is because those small market teams, Arizona, whatever, we all know. But they can,
can't even afford
they
a rink.
Can either choose or not choose to use the exemption. I in a perfect world, there's a way where you pay your top player. Let's say it's $12.5 million in the salary cap. It raises every year, but you can pay him any overage you want or 100% overage. So you could pay him $25 million if you wanted to. And that way you wouldn't have bench players with the Raptors making more than Austin Matthews, who's the best goal scorer in the game right now.
And Mac from Hamilton in the text line raises this point. I have no idea how the NHL has gotten away with zero players on the true maximum contract for so long. How many max players does the NBA have?
And that's really the point. That ends soon. Mm-hmm. Players are going to be signing for the max soon. And Austin Matthews is literally the guy to shepherd that in, which is bad news for the Leafs. Good news if they want to pay him, though, because that means Austin Matthews is going to stick around.
Stay tuned for more of this, especially tomorrow. Elliot Friedman joining us. How does this affect the Leafs? Of course. You're going to afford a hell of a lot of loony dogs moving forward. Let's take a break. We'll do the A-list next. A lot of talk around NHL coaches, but in a very unique form. That's next on the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ayler, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Yeah. Sportsnet 590, 590, The Fan.
Back on The Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Analytics mean a lot in the hockey community. And yesterday, a very important spreadsheet of data analysis was released online. That's first up in the A-list.
Now, it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
Gambling.com. What a handle.
I'm glad you prefaced it with that.
Yes.
We got to be a little skeptical.
Gambling.com, your go-to site for the following information, decided to compile some data to determine which NHL coaches are aging like fine wines and whose hard-knock hockey careers have taken a toll. The website used a beauty analysis app called Golden Ratio Face to measure how attractive NHL coaches are.
So there is method here.
The app, free to download, which we will be doing between the break and analyzing our faces, just to put that out there, uses facial symmetry, facial structure, and the so-called, quote, golden ratio, a measure of physical perfection, according to ancient Greeks, to calculate how beautiful people are, assigning them a score out of 10. Okay, so that's your disclaimer of where all this information comes from.
That's important information.
Take it as you may. They ranked all of the NHL coaches, all 32 of them. Number one most handsome NHL coach in the league. Jay Woodcroft, head coach of the Edmonton Oilers at 46 years old. That's fine. I don't agree with it.
Is that fine?
No, but let me...
It's not fine.
Daryl Sutter. I don't want it to speak...
It's a tough discussion because, you know, we're not...
I'm just going to present the information to the listeners. How about that? No take.
Well, Darryl, small takes. Funny takes.
Daryl Sutter, number two.
64, I mean...
He got an 8.9 out of 10 score. Sorry.
He is jacked.
Jay Woodcroft got
9.18. Have you seen Daryl Sutter when he wears that, like, ripped under... You've never seen that? Daryl Sutter is a monster.
I'm not sizing Daryl Sutter up.
It's impossible not to. You have to see this in the break. He is a monster. It looks like he looks like Arnold Lee's bodybuilder.
Wow.
Monster.
As a 64-year-old, good for him. You just need to go, listeners, I just retweeted it, and take a look at this ranking. I must say, two things stand out to me. Jared Bednar at number 15 is an absolute travesty for this league. Jared Bednar is the most handsome NHL coach by far. Let me just tell you that. I'll stand on that hill. 50 years old, Colorado Avalanche head coach. Got an 8.09 rating. 15th?
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple other names here. I mean, Luke Richardson's a stud. Marty St. Louis is tied in 20th with Pete DeBoer.
20! David Quinn also deserves a bit more respect. 29th in the league, David Quinn?
Just behind Gerard Gallant.
Come on. Gerard Gallant.
I've heard good things about Bruce Cassidy, too, and he's hanging out at 23rd.
Sheldon Keefe coming in at 13, middle of the pack. Love it for him. An 8.19 rating. He's the youngest coach in the league.
I mean, Bruce Boudreau is the funniest,
so this is
though.
The best. Okay, so...
He's 16th.
Bruce Boudreau, 16th most attractive NHL coach in the league by this rating, as 8.06 rating. He was told this yesterday at the press conference for the Vancouver Canucks. This is what he had to say.
Bruce, there's a gaming website that came out with a poll this morning ranking the most handsome coaches in the National Hockey League.
Oh, my God, I don't want to be in that poll.
Hey, I got good news for you. You're 16th overall, and out of a ranking out of 10, you scored, I think, 8.0.
There must have been an awful lot of blind people doing that.
care to bet who they rank as the most handsome and the most ugliest?
Well, no, I'm not going to say. I know who it is, but I'm not saying.
They rank Jay Woodcroft as the most handsome, and the ugliest was Peter Laviolette.
Oh. Not who I thought, but...
I love Bruce. Bruce is one of my favorite coaches ever in the NHL. Must have been a lot of blind people voting. I love it. But you know what? Good on him to not be like, this is who the ugliest is. Not in those words, but Peter Laviolette ranked dead last.
Yeah, it's tough. Tough for Peter.
6.04 rating.
Again, like, it doesn't stand out as like a problem for Peter. He seems like a middle of the pack guy. It's hard to, this is all scientific. Ran a formula and a program. Spit out these results.
How much do you believe in analytics? Here you go.
but there's a lot of stuff to quibble about on this list.
Last one I'll mention. 27th overall, John Cooper. Come on.
I mean, John.
He's got to be a top 10.
He's an older guy. He's only 55, actually. Maybe that's the problem, because he looks older than 55, no?
Well, he's had a couple lengthy series to deal
with. He looks
like
he's 65 and looks good, but he's actually 55, which is maybe maybe part of the analytics.
Anyway, 590, 590.
I sent you a photo of Daryl Sutter jacked.
And I'll take a look.
I needed to look at it.
That's the way that this shook out, this gambling.com. Golden Ratio Face app. Justin and I will do that during the break. We'll let you know our scores. There's some information for you to ponder. Something to chew on, potentially. Where your favorite coach ranks. Blake Murphy, next on the Fan Morning Show. We're going to talk Jays. We're going to talk Raptors. We're going to talk John Schneider. That's next on the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ailish. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.